Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
We got a lot to talk about this morning. We are diving back into the Nancy Grace disappearance, and where it's all at. There's been so many questions over the last 5 months now, which is what we are going on to, and not enough answers. One of the strangest things about the Nancy Guthrie case is how inconsistent the offender behavior appears. Whoever approached that house allegedly came prepared enough to conceal identity, carry a weapon, and interfere with surveillance equipment. But at the same time, the behavior around the ransom communications, the digital trail, the apparent lack of clean operational control feels a bit messy. This lane is about the contradiction at the center of the case. Are investigators dealing with someone highly organized or someone just organized enough to be dangerous? We're going to tackle that. Who this person might be, what sort of damage has been done to the case already, and what can be done moving forward in three different parts today. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining me to break all this down. Jen has been on this case from day one, and over on Break the Case, your podcast and your YouTube channel, I know you have been so deep into this almost every single day, and I've really wanted to get back with you on that. And just kind of do a recap, kind of a reconvening here, where things are at right now and where they might be going. Let's just kind of go back towards the beginning. The suspect, as we know, allegedly understood enough to target a camera system. There was a camera there. We saw what he did with the greenery. Camera goes out. Apparently not, though, enough to understand the back end. Cloud recovery might still preserve footage. And there's been back and forth about that, and that seems to be the big piece everybody talks about because there's not enough other pieces to talk about. So let's talk about it. It's a weird middle ground. Does that suggest that this was somebody who was having some sort of technical familiarity with how the camera works, or somebody who's sophisticated, or somebody who grabbed some greenery and got rid of the camera? All of these 5 months in, Where do you sit on the interaction that the masked man had with Nancy's doorbell camera?
Well, when you look, and such a great question, when you look at this, the way he skulks up, and we know he was there on a prior date, or at least it would appear probably January 11th that he was there without his gun, without the backpack, different shoes, different shirt. And he's right up there on that porch. And so he definitely did some surveillance. He knows exactly where that camera is. He puts his head down. And as he approaches, I think it is clear that he has a mission, and that's to pull it off. But to your deeper question, so what's his technical capability? Did he think pulling off that camera would suffice without a subscription? And that is if we are to understand that he somehow is related enough to know there wasn't a subscription. Tony, I got to tell you that Sheriff Nanos and many others didn't think there was any way to get that coverage without a subscription. It's a minor miracle that Google and the FBI worked together to pull that on day 10. It really, really is. I don't know if people can really appreciate the millions and millions and millions of photos and video that would be written over and over and over again, like an onion. And the fact they were able to pull any of it. I thought this was really interesting when Kash Patel said very recently, a couple of days ago, that, geez, if we could have been pulled into the investigation on day one instead of day four, we could have maybe gotten more because, again, that onion was just being layered on top of. So I thought that was really interesting.
And I want to get into that in our second segment about the damage that may have been already done and some of the things that Kash has said. Let's talk about this a little bit more because I think there's still a lot of confusion as to understanding the camera itself and what it has caught over the course of time. I know there has been then talk that did he show up two different times? Was there surveillance going on? Give us some insight here. Refresh me on this. Do we know for a fact that he did show up at two different dates and that we have two different images that we've seen from this camera that were not from the same evening that she disappeared?
So initially when I saw that, I thought it could have been the same night, but that he wasn't rigged up yet, geared up. Then as more and more information came in, I do believe it's a different night, and I do believe it's the 11th. Why do I think that? A couple of supporting factors. Number one, Savannah says that. She specifically put out a statement and says the 11th is important. The night of the 31st is important, which is also interesting. And then the other thing that is, to me, factual, what I can put my eyes on and say is different, appears to be the lighting. So on the first, when she was abducted at that time frame, there was a full moon. The 11th, it was a waning crescent. So a sliverish of a moon, less lighting. And you can see that. In addition, I don't think he would have changed his shirt. If you look closely, his shoes, you can take the backpack and not put the holster on. But I do think it's going to be likely a separate day.
If it was two nights and he did surveil and he looked at, okay, here's the entryway, what does that mean for the doorbell, though? I mean, it was the fact that he got there, had to turn it. Was this just a stupid, simple oversight? I know I'm still stuck on it, because if this was a two-night thing and he knew there's a doorbell there with a camera on it, wouldn't you be ready immediately to go right up to that thing and take it out? Not, there's a doorbell. Let me turn around and grab some foliage. Again, unless I'm misinterpreting what the foliage even was to begin with. Was that not to cover it? Was that more of a gripping mechanism? I know we've talked about that as well.
Yeah, when I see it and watch the footage, it looks to me like he 100% knows it's there. He comes in with his head straight down like this and kind of skulks in there. And then he puts his hand over the camera, which is all you would need. You don't need shrubbery. That's going to cover it even less. Right? Not shrubbery. I shouldn't call it that. It's ivy. I believe it's ivy. But he puts the foliage up. I'm sorry. So he goes like this and something is happening. And if you look at his gloves, they are so big. They're wrinkled on his hands. And I think he possibly could have had another pair under. I'm unsure of that, but certainly the gloves don't fit. And I surmise that he went to grab that and he can't get a good grip because the gloves are so big. So he goes back. I don't think the foliage or the ivy is used as concealment. He's got his hand he can just put up there and pull it with the other hand. I think he's having a gripping problem. And part of the reason I believe that is if you look at the mechanism that actually held that camera, it has ivy that's on it, like in it. In other words, ripped so hard that it's in the screws and in the mechanism that held. If you were just having it out here to cover, it would never need to touch that. So for some reason, I think he grabbed it with that ivy. And I don't think he thought it would be so hard to grip and pull.
Yeah, it's almost like we've been almost misinterpreting the purpose of the ivy to begin with, if that's what it was for. Let's talk about another element here. Obviously, it's been a big one because it continues to be, I think, it continues to make the most noise of everything, because when there's not a lot going on, any little noise that happens is big. And anybody could ring this bell if they so wanted to. I guess if you send an email to TMZ and say you want some money, you'll get some press. If the ransom was truly the objective, the victim selection itself feels a little bit strange. I mean, Nancy was elderly, medically vulnerable, had mobility limitations, and reportedly required medication. Operationally, that's an extremely high-maintenance victim. Does the victimology itself undermine this kidnapping-for-profit narrative? I mean, what's your thoughts here? Was this a kidnapping-for-profit? What are we thinking the motive was here now that we're 5 months in and have had some time to let some of the dust semi-settle?
Right. So I think it's twofold. I think it's 100% targeted. And I believe that this person, it's personal. So targeted, they want Nancy. They want the family to suffer. They want money. They want public humiliation. And they got it all. They did it all. They got what they wanted. So when you really add it all up, to me, that's all you can see, because there's no reason. I do believe this. I don't believe that they thought that she, and this is just what I believe, that she expired. I don't believe they thought they couldn't keep her alive long enough to do a demand.
Yeah.
So now she's dead. They have no proof of life. So what do? They're going to go to the media and make this big and make it embarrassing for the family. Because now the family, a lot of people believe they're losers for not saving their mom when they're worth $40 million, right? A lot of people are going after this family. It pisses me off, but it's happening. And it's because they put this out here on TMZ.
Yeah.
For millions to see. Why? Why do you do that when you know the family is going to be told by the FBI, you don't pay it unless you have proof of life? And then they beg for proof of life. Then they pray for proof of death. You're right. They beg the people, and then they don't get any of it. So they don't give any money. And look at what people are saying. These people, when you ask if they're sophisticated, they're a dichotomy for sure. But you know what, Tony? They've accomplished exactly, I think, what they wanted to accomplish. The Guthrie family suffered, Nancy suffering, likely deceased. They got exactly what they wanted, and they haven't been caught by the FBI yet.
So is this just, I mean, was money ever a motivation? Do you think that was the original plan here and it just went horribly sideways and then they got really angry? Like, damn it, she died. Let's make the family suffer. I mean, it just seems so cartoon villain. I mean, where it's like, I want to make them suffer. That does exist. I mean, we've seen like Koberger and things like that. There's sadistic, horrible human beings out there. I guess they'd have to be that if we're going to go down that road of they're sitting in a corner and they really enjoy watching other people suffer. And I guess how much of the vehicle is that is driving whatever occurred here?
I think that's what's driving it. Yeah. I really do. And if you want a family to suffer, if you want I mean, that's what you take away from them. You take away their money if you can. They couldn't. You take away life, and you take away their positive prominence in the public's perception. And, you know, you have people pointing fingers at all the family members. I mean, basically, you have people. I saw a survey. Ridiculous. Millions of Americans believe Annie Guthrie and Tommaso are responsible for this.
I know. And it's people will dig into whatever bullshit, and it's hard to get them out. It's a weird motivation for something like this. I mean, granted, so many cases are weird, but just to inflict pain on people, and that's the goal. I guess why? I mean, why Nancy? I mean, is this something where, and I'm wondering if there's another piece to this that we're not seeing that is in the hands of the authorities or in the hands of somebody. That is there a message that these people wanted to get out, or this person wanted to get out, and that has been delivered to a media outlet, but somebody has said, no, we're not going to give out, put this message out there for you. Were they using this as a vehicle to get attention, is what I'm saying. They got their attention and thought, okay, now's the time. The stage is set. I can give my message. And they gave their message and they're like, nope, we're not going to publish that. That would make a little more sense than just, okay, we inflicted pain and damage and suffering and now we disappeared.
Well, how have they disappeared? You know, I keep asking this question. If you look at the first two ransom notes, clearly law enforcement believed them to be legitimate.
Yeah.
They had very particulars in them, what she was wearing, all of this, and they would not have orchestrated all of those, you know, the conglomeration of the family coming together to reach out if they didn't believe in them. That's just facts. So
yeah,
believed it. And Savannah has said, I believe the first two are real. That's what she believes. And I think that's from the totality of what she knows from law enforcement. So if we're to believe the first two are real, remember there's six emails, I should call them. They're not letters, they're emails that went into the servers in two different local Tucson affiliates. When that didn't get the play 12 hours later, it goes to TMZ, which of course is going to get the play. They are a huge, yeah. You know, that's what they talk about. Celebrities, Savannah's a celebrity, and true crime. Uh-huh. You mix that all together, it makes sense to go to TMZ. But not for money. That's not for money. That is for notoriety, control. You think of it as a person who sexually assaults somebody.
Yeah.
They control of the whole dynamic. And how better way to get control than to send those letters out? But I followed up with this, Tony. You know, there's been about six other letters, including two that came the day Savannah returned.
Uh-huh.
Great, returned to the set. And these other letters, nobody has said they're connected. Savannah didn't say these were connected. But riddle me this, same modus operandi, going to these media outlets, same Bitcoin, right? They want Bitcoin, not any other cryptocurrency that's named. They have a Bitcoin account set up. We know it's different than the first one. And look at the pain that's inflicted. Savannah goes back and they send two more. I'm just saying law enforcement doesn't know who the six emails are from, the first six. And they don't know who the letters are from. Mm-hmm. So how could you possibly say they're definitely not interrelated?
If those first emails were legit and there was information on them that only they knew, let's assume that that's what they are for a moment. Because I know there's been a lot of kerfuffle about that too, where it's, well, they could have figured this out by just doing some Googling, doing some AI work, and you can make something sound pretty real, even if it's not. But let's say that there was something there that we're not aware of that hasn't been published that, yeah, okay, this clearly has to be the person because only they would know this. Did the FBI give the bad advice? Was that bad advice to say don't pay it early on without proof of life? Now, obviously, you want the proof of life, but if you have such really solid info on this thing that really only they could know, there's coulda, shoulda, woulda, but was that the wrong advice in a situation like this?
Well, my thing is, what's the quid pro quo? You give, but what are you getting back? They disappear with the money. And, you know, looking at this whole Bitcoin, and I mean, I was on a Bitcoin terror for about 3 weeks and had a specialist on that was so good. The bottom line is, to say that that can't be traced is just not correct.
Then why hasn't it been?
What's that?
Then why hasn't it been?
Well, there's been no deposit made that's been withdrawn.
Okay.
There's $300, you know, just to see if it worked, I guess. But nobody withdrew that $300. Why do you think nobody withdrew the $300? Because I think they're concerned, if I withdraw, could there have been something, a parameter put into place where I'm going to be traced? Does everybody get where I'm going with this? I mean, there are a lot of Bitcoin cases that have been solved, and the end user has been identified. That's why I keep saying, tickle the frickin' wire.
Well, at this point, would it even work? I mean, at this point, if they're still out there, they're watching us. They're watching everybody. They'd know. Well, clearly at this point, if I withdraw this, they're going to figure out who I am. I mean, they'd have to find another method, I would think, to try and gain this money. I mean, if they were to suddenly drop, here's $100,000 in this wallet, it's a little more incentive to, well, it's not worth $300 to see if they catch me, but $100,000, million, whatever it may, you want to drop into there, that may make somebody, you know, take a shot at it and see, can I get away with this? I guess, is that worth doing? Why hasn't the FBI done something like that to tickle the wire?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's not a certainty that the breadcrumb of the withdrawal would definitely mean victory. In other words, that they would definitely be exposed, right? There's all these things you can do with these Bitcoin accounts. And it's literally like back in the day when you did a money drop, or when somebody robbed a bank and had the money, and you're literally tracing, oh, that money was used at JCPenney's. Oh, that money was used for this. And it's a nightmare, but you finally, takes forever, but you can find how it comes out clean. You know, if enough of these breadcrumbs. So it would be a nightmare, from what my understanding now is, of Bitcoin, because of all these different things. But, you know, you have to be able to make it liquid. Although I don't know if you knew this, but you can use Bitcoin in fast food places now.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of people believe it is our future, is this cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
For what that's worth. But what I mean is, who cares if you have $100,000 if you can't buy a car with it? So they need to be. So that's just my point. Why hasn't the FBI done it? I think they don't want to set a precedent. By the way, it's already been set abroad, just not here, that if you don't have proof of life, you pay. Right?
Sure.
Because they worry about other people doing that. So I totally understand that. I'm just saying, if you're at a dead end, I would be doing that.
Yeah.
If you're dead end.
Yeah. There's so many questions as to why is this happening? Why is this not happening? And yeah, I mean, I don't know. And I don't think anyone does. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. The links are in the description. At this point, the Nancy Guthrie case isn't just about what's happening at the house. It's about what happens after law enforcement arrived. The FBI director publicly criticized the handling of the case. Pima County pushed back. Evidence reportedly went through multiple channels. The public got conflicting narratives about access, timing, then forensic processing. In this section, in this lane, we're going to be talking about something investigators hate discussing publicly, whether institutional friction may have damaged some of the case itself. And I think friction might be putting it nicely. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, with us to help break this down. Law enforcement agencies disagree privately all the time. But when an FBI director, now Cash, has come out and publicly implied critical evidence handling was delayed or mishandled, he did this on Sean Hannity's podcast. What does it tell you about the level of frustration behind the scenes here, and just kind of the, I don't know, kind of callous, off the cuff kind of way it was delivered on the Sean Hannity podcast? I mean, it's just, it was, I don't know. I'm not surprised, and I'm not saying it was a bad thing that he said what he said. I think it was very kind of just forthcoming and raw about the case. But it certainly has implications as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, the director of the FBI.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really unprecedented. I've talked about the fact that directors are typically back in for decades, they were figureheads. They were not in the weeds of investigations. That was trickled down to the assistant directors and then down, of course, to the field agents. Remember, it's the field agents that really have most of the power. They're the ones actually working the cases and making the day-to-day decisions. So to see a director point this out, I thought was huge. I mean, it is the biggest slap in the face that I've probably seen ever in any case when you have a director point that kind of finger. And really not even that veiled, Tony, give the implication, like about the DNA and about the issues. You know, I always say this, when you have cracks at the top, you're going to have cracks in an investigation. Having said that, I truly believe the boots on the ground are working well together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's great investigative work that is going on behind the scenes here. It's just your figureheads are not the greatest, it seems, on this. I mean, when Cash speaks about this, it makes you go, okay, well, he's not the greatest at decorum to begin with. I mean, is he speaking out of turn? Was that speaking out of turn to say something like that, in your opinion? Was that a wise move? I'm not trying to make this a let's criticize Cash Patel segment, but I don't know. Was that a good move? Is that level of transparency something that is a nice change and we should have more of that? Or is that someone who really just doesn't quite know the ropes and the cause and effect of speaking out in that sort of way, and someone who really wants to be a field agent and really has no true FBI experience, but is now suddenly the director of it and doesn't quite know his role and the cause and effect of the words that come out of his mouth?
Well, I think if you look at what he promised Trump, he said, listen, I'm going to curb violent crime in cities. We're going to deport everyone we possibly can. And we are going to be transparent in terms of things we're doing, at least, you know, the things they decide they want to be transparent about. And he's transparent for sure on this case. So, you know, I think it just depends on your lens. I mean, you're talking right now to a 25-year-old or a 25-year vet of an institution that I just thought so much of. And we did things so differently when I was in. We were so quiet. We just did our work. And in this new age of social media, and it's a whole different can of worms, I think.
How does that affect the operation of the investigation when things like this are being spoken about publicly? Maybe this is the new norm. Maybe this is how things are going to be going forward, whether it's Cash Patel or whoever is in that position. I don't know. Again, I'm not trying to make this a rip on Cash Patel segment. I'm just trying to understand the dynamics here of what's going on. And if this is how things are being handled now, is this for the better? That's kind of where I'm at. I don't know.
This is the new norm, I think. This is not going away unless they get somebody after Cash Patel. If they hire somebody like a Chris Swecker, who used to be number two, you know, AD over the entire criminal, if they get somebody like that, you're going to see it go back to more how it used to. He will certainly be, he's a great public speaker and he'll come out a little bit more. But, you know, he was considered for the job. If you have somebody like that, an old school that was an FBI agent for decades, or at least 10 years, I think, probably 10 years. I don't know. It was a long time. Maybe it was 2 decades. Anyway, nevertheless, you're going to see that. But this is a new age type person. Cash Patel, I mean, he came in. He said, I'm going to get rid of headquarters. He's getting rid of headquarters. I'm going to take everybody from there and I'm going to put him out in the field. I have to say, he's following through with everything he promised, and we're going to continue to see this. But wow, I think it could have a big effect if he's going to talk about different local offices in this way.
Well, it makes me wonder a little bit, and I'm trying to look at this, you know, with open eyes on every perspective of this and really kind of take personal opinion and things out of it. In a way, the way that he did call this out and basically, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing here, but talking about the first, you know, 4 days here, 72 hours of, if we had gotten a call earlier, we had resources. He said he had a plane ready to go. He had all these things that were ready to go, but they weren't launched because they weren't given permission locally to go in and assist. In a way, it kind of puts other departments on notice to a certain extent of, okay, if you think you can handle this and you really can't, let's be smart about this and let's call in the FBI and let's use the resources when we should and not, you know, think we can handle something that we can't. But at the same time, it also does state, you know, I wonder how different this case would be had they been called in sooner. Two different things, putting other departments on notice, it seems, and also at the same time, what could have been done differently? What do you think we would be sitting here talking about today had the FBI been involved from the first 24 hours?
Well, first, Tony, I do want to say this, is that when you're talking about a public official, which is exactly what Sheriff Nanos is, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to Kash Patel, he's an appointed official. So at any moment, Trump could say you're fired,
yeah.
Right? It's a big difference. But I think it is important to be transparent to the public when you're talking about a public official, not in an after action report, although that might have had less issues with this case. So let me make my point more clear because I'm not being clear. Tony, when you come out at the beginning of a case, in the middle of a case, and all of this comes to light, just think of what this has done when you talk about the adjudication of the case, the defense attorneys that are drooling to take this case, because we're watching out publicly what Kash Patel is saying about the screw-ups in the case, right? If you don't have that, if Kash Patel doesn't say anything, if Nanos kept his mouth shut, you just have balls that were dropped that nobody's really going to know about. And my belief, you let everybody know about in the after action. You break it out publicly. Oh my gosh, it was 4 days. It went to the wrong lab. But to do it right now in an ongoing case, I think is more detrimental than the good it does. So that's my take on that.
How should Nanos be responding to this sort of criticism? When the interest ultimately for everybody here is finding Nancy Guthrie dead or alive at this point. But it seems to be we're playing more of a ping pong game of ego. It's not my problem. It's not my problem. If I did this, if I did that. Rather than actually, hey, let's look at the ball here and look at the game and figure out what we need to do best, not, you know, who's swinging something bigger. I mean, that seems to be what this is turning into more than the actual, you know, purpose of the game itself, of finding Nancy.
Well, you're right. I mean, when you look at mainstream media, even social media, even our podcasting, we now have, you know, at least 10 to 25% on Nanos and on the relationship with the FBI, because that is what's front and center, is how has an 84-year-old woman with the abductor on camera not been found?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
90 days in, almost 100, how has that happened? And so that's why you have media, social media, you and me and everybody else going, well, maybe we really need to look at this deeply. And we're seeing all these cracks within the decision-making early on. So I think that that's the genesis for why all of this started, like you said, that we're so off base in terms of Nancy becoming almost an afterthought to the focus right now. And it's really sad, but when you look at it, it's what are the investigators doing behind the scene? And they're still carrying on, no matter what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what the public facing thing is, there are certainly the people on the ground are what matters more than anything else. But I mean, obviously optics are extremely important. It just seems the folks in charge don't seem to grasp that concept very well. There's so much to this that obviously feels like it could be done better, but here's where we're at right now. And hoping for the best. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. The public has largely consumed the Nancy Guthrie case as a who took her mystery, but another possibility hangs over the investigation. What if the public-facing narrative itself is misleading? The ransom notes may be noise. The camera tampering may have been partially performative. The offender behavior may not align with the motive people assume. And sometimes in cases like this, the most dangerous thing investigators face is not a lack of evidence. It's evidence pointing in conflicting directions at once. We were just talking about Kash Patel. We were talking about Nanos. We were talking about almost the statements that Kash has made publicly on Hannity's podcast about if they had been brought in a little bit sooner. To me, it almost, like I said, puts other departments on notice to a certain extent of, hey, if you got something that you can't handle, you better call us so we can get in there. I guess the question I have on some of that going forward with other departments is, does speaking out like that, does that encourage other departments to call the FBI for assistance, or does that make them go, maybe we better off just handling this in-house without the extra noise and the extra chaos coming in, although be it well-intentioned with, you know, the actual investigators on the ground, sometimes, I mean, it does feel like you got chaos here and you got chaos there. And if you're already, let's say there's a department that is operating in a very fruitful way, I don't know that this is, you know, if you're the person making a decision going, let me call that guy. He seems like he'll be here to help. I don't know. Does that encourage or discourage, you think, other departments, should they be facing something of similar nature?
Well, it better encourage them.
Yeah.
Because what lessons from Delphi, what lessons from this case, even from Idaho, in actually a pretty positive way.
Yeah.
Right. The lesson learned there was, listen, you had 60 agents on that and stateies on it. You had everyone involved in that case. And in 5 weeks, they nabbed this guy that would have never been. I mean, he was unusual, right? He shouldn't have been on the radar. PhD student, unrelated to the victims, lived in another state, blah, blah. But they put it all together, and they put it all together quick, but they were involved on day one. And same with the state police. Moscow didn't say, oh, I think our crime scene people can handle it. I understand Moscow is smaller than Pima County, and I'm not trying to put down Pima County. I'm just saying, if you can have it all, why aren't you having it all?
Yeah.
The president was literally on television on his Air Force One talking about the Nancy Guthrie case and how they have the full breadth of resources from the FBI. If I'm a sheriff, I'm like, perfect, because I'm going to look really good when this is solved. It doesn't matter that the FBI solves it or you aided in solving it. That is the piece. I still say any missteps or misjudgments from us looking in by Sheriff Nanos are strictly because of ego, not because of incompetence. I don't even think he's incompetent. Mm-hmm. His ego got too big.
Yeah. I mean, the two can play hand in hand, and one can destroy the other. The ego can destroy the competence or severely stain it. Another element to this that has been discussed is because we all keep looking at this damn thing and we're like, what's going on here? Something just doesn't make sense. And you have to, at some point, now that we're 5 minutes in, go, am I looking at this wrong? Are the blocks that I have in place in my head from my understanding of this case, is there something that's not what it appears to be? And now the discussion is kind of going to, well, are there elements of this that are staged? Is there a staged narrative? And I'm in no way going down conspiracy routes here by any means. I'm talking about whoever the perpetrator is, did they take steps to essentially lead investigators down another path? What are your thoughts on that? Is there any elements here? Is there anything you're saying that I'm not or others are not that leads you down that road in any way, shape, or form where, you know, objects here in the rearview mirror may be closer than they appear?
Well, I want to preface this by saying what I mean by staged. Do I think Nancy was killed someplace else? No. Do I think Nancy was, you know, somehow brought back to the scene so her pacemaker could connect with the phone and, you know, thus make it look like she was abducted? I really don't. Do I think the doors were kept open to show perhaps multiple people that would have entered or something like that? I do think that's possible. Mm-hmm. So I think certain things could have been partially staged. I know that there is a lot of talk out there about could she not have even been abducted? You know, that the whole thing is just a big menagerie.
Huh? What is this one? What walk me down that road.
Oh, this is an interesting one. It's interesting because it comes from somebody who is well-respected.
Okay.
And the thought process is this, is that Nancy was killed someplace else. Nancy, this whole abduction thing is a bunch of baloney. Porch guy is baloney. In other words, that's why he's, you know, it's all just a play. And that they, you know, killed her someplace else. Obviously, they would have had to bring her back or otherwise have her blood droplets to drop on the porch. So maybe not bring her back, blood droplets on the porch. Basically, that the whole thing is staged.
For what? Why? How?
For murder. That they murdered her separately. That was the motive. The motive was murdered. And then to cover up the murder, they staged this abduction to get everybody down the road of this being an abduction when it's not. It's a cover for a murder.
Is this down the road of, because I haven't gone down a lot of roads that get kind of weedy. Is this one of those where it points at family members or something like that? Is that, or because I'm trying to understand, and I'm in no way am I blaming a family man. I do not believe that whatsoever. But I'm wondering, okay, they dropped her off that night. I mean, there's the garage door, all that stuff. I mean, there's evidence that she was home. She connected to, you know, the app and everything. Is it something in that vein where they never dropped her off or something? Is that where that goes?
I think it's certainly in the vein that it's somebody very close to the family that would have been involved. But I'm just saying that's certainly out there when you're looking at what is in the ether. It's in the ether, and it's an interesting thought. I just, you know,
How would that play out if without a family member being involved? I mean, if she was dropped off, she was out, they were playing cards. I mean, where would they have abducted her from that night? Or am I off on that too? If this were to play out, where it wouldn't involve a family member,
I think the only way for that scenario to play out is for a family member to be involved.
Okay, so that's one of the theories that are out there. Okay, yeah.
But I mean, think about this, Tony, and I will say this. It is so incongruent. This guy on the porch with his holster in his crotch, big gloves, you know, lumbering around. That's the problem with this case, is it does not comport with any other kidnapping that you would.
It doesn't.
That's
no, it doesn't. And I mean, and just thinking about that for a second, because this is the first time I've really absorbed that one. So like my wheels are turning on it. You would have to essentially, I don't even know how this plays out. Like what is she accidentally dies? Again, if she accidentally dies, why would you be doing this? So let's for a second say somebody killed her, and then we got to blame it on somebody else because we don't want to take the blame. So then what? You suddenly have all of the gear to make it look like you're going to kidnap her? Quick, let's get on our kidnapping outfit and show up on the porch so it looks like this. I mean, again, it's just like step by, like, yeah, that's why I've never gone down the road, because you do, and it's like, no, it just doesn't add up. Again, you've been down this far deeper than I have. Mm-hmm. What other crazy ones are out there right now? And I'm not trying to give light to them, but I'm curious as to where people's minds are going on this.
I mean, I would say that is probably the biggest one. And this is what has people wondering.
Yeah.
They believe that because nothing has been released.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, the public isn't entitled to all this information.
No.
They believe that because there's no footage, if you will, they don't have anything showing that she was dropped off. They have the garage door that goes up, this 2-minute time frame that's been disclosed where she goes in. And it's, in my view, it's totally reasonable. I mean, you know, I can't make any sense of why people don't believe. For instance, people are upset because there's an Uber driver that took her to Tommaso's and Annie's house that night.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that makes total sense. If I'm the one, like, we're all family, and I said, listen, I'm in the middle of making, you know, ravioli and Caesar salad and blah, blah, blah. I've got a child at home. Listen, mom, Uber over. It's $5.
Yeah.
And I bet you anything, Nancy insists on it when she goes over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought. So people want to extrapolate. Okay, the Uber thing is weird. I personally don't find that weird at all.
I don't either. I don't either. And I think it's a matter of if you use Uber or not.
He takes her home, Tony. By himself takes her home. So if you're the mastermind behind this whole thing, you're going to be the one that becomes the last person to purportedly see her.
Yeah, I mean, none of it adds up. And again, I mean, and they've checked the family. It just doesn't. But I get you, people are trying to fill in blanks. I mean, there's responsible ways of doing it, and there's irresponsible ways of doing it. There's just some roads that just don't add up to make a whole lot of sense. Any way you push it,
Occam's razor.
Yeah.
The guy comes, he does surveillance. He apparently did surveillance on the 11th and on the 31st. He's ready to do the hit. He's not comfortable with firearms, but he wants to have a firearm there. Not because he can't get an 84-year-old to comply, but I think because he's in there doing his best impersonation of Rambo. He gets all gillied up in really what is more of a costume than what you normally see somebody in. And he doesn't even Rambo in there. He's not going in there like most home predators, invaders. No, he's comfortable. He knows he's going to get caught. I think he has somebody else because there's that two-way radio sending out the antenna. And then watch him as he looks off to the left, freeze frame that. I've got like 6 freeze frames where he's like, you know, to me, there's somebody over there. And then they walk around the house, possibly go in through 2 separate doors. They leave those doors open. They go snatch her. They don't bother to close them. And they whisk her off through the front door, which is pre-planned. The other guy is in the car. They gag her, put a hood over her face, carry her out. She's dripping blood because her skin is like crepe paper because she's on, you know, all the different medication, the blood thinners. They throw her in the trunk. And when they get to their destination, they're like, oh my gosh, she died.
Surprise.
I mean, that is the Occam's razor notion. And now they're pissed. There's no way to get any money. And they put out those 2 notes, not to family. They don't go there with a ransom note. if you want money, you go there with a ransom note and you leave it for likely Annie and Tommaso to find.
Yeah.
When she, you know, it's not law enforcement. Family is going to go there first. They're not going to immediately think, oh, mom didn't show up at church, her church meeting. I guess that means she's dead.
Yeah. Is there anything, and we'll wrap on this, if you were running this investigation, Jennifer, right now, what, based on what we know, what would you be doing? Where would you be taking this? Is there anything that they have right now that you would say, put this out into the public? This can only help. This can't hurt. What direction would you be going here with this?
I am so glad you asked that. First of all, number one, and I've said this before, all those flipping billboards would have Porch Guy's face on. I think they're around 25 or something like that. All of them, I would flip them. I'd have Porch Guy on them. Number two, I would run a ridiculous flyer campaign in the Tucson area. I would have, if I were in the FBI, I would say, listen, we are printing up a million of these flyers. I want them on every grocery store, every tree pole, every barbershop, every place in the Hispanic community. Everything would be in both English and in Spanish. And so I would blitzkrieg trying to figure out who Porch Guy is. That would be number one, blitzkrieg. Mm-hmm. Number two, when it comes to the DNA, as far as I know, and maybe they have finally went back, but I don't think so. They never took the doormat. I would get one of my agents and I would have ERT go there and preserve that doormat, even though it's been trampled and ruined and everything else, because you never know if there is some DNA from the perpetrator on there. I know it's too late. I know it's 3 months, but at least you try it. I would definitely grab that doormat and any other doormats, because if those doors were propped open, they likely came in through them. And people have things like mud on their shoes, hairs from their dog, a crumb from their, you know, croissant that they had that morning. I would go back and grab all of that. I still don't understand how that wasn't done. So I would grab that. Those stick out to me as far as the DNA. I like the fact that ABC reported they're at 5 different labs. That's where it should be. There should be multi-labs tasked with this. And I still don't think everybody should get excited about this hair, because hairs are transient.
Yeah.
But you never know. They could get lucky there. But that's, I mean, I would jump on Porch Guy. That's their best lead. And obviously, I would still be tracking that backpack. I know everybody says, oh, there's millions of them that were sold. They still originated at Walmart.
Yeah.
Still be hunting that down.
I'm surprised. I mean, I am surprised by the amount of things that and roads that could have been gone down or probably have been gone down that I guess have been, as far as we're aware in the public, have led to nowhere, that have led to nowhere with like the backpack, things of that nature. But obviously there's back channel ways of getting things without having a receipt from Walmart. But I don't know that this is someone, I don't know. I mean, my conjecture would be that I don't know if this is someone who really thought well enough to get it through a back channel way and didn't just go to Walmart and buy it. You know, as we see with so many of these cases, it's the shopping history that gets them.
Every one of those sold in that Tucson-ish area. Every one. And I would put my analysts on it and I'd say, you're tracking this backpack until you figure out the end user. And you're calling them, and the end user's like, oh, yeah, I got it right here. I would be doing that. That might lead to him. It's always, this is how it works behind the scenes. It really does. You take what nugget you have and you run it. And I'm sure that's what they're doing, and it's taking forever. How about the video, Tony? I would put a huge emphasis on that video. I'd take a 2-hour time frame, see where the people could get from 2:20 or 2:30. 2:29 in the morning, and do a huge radius. And I would also geofence the choke points for those. I'm sure they're doing this. They got to be doing it.
Let's hope they are. And if not, here's some instructions on what you should do.
Listen, yeah, it's not rocket science, but it is time behind the tiller, Tony.
It is.
And you do it for years and years. You just like whatever it is. You become good at it.
And that's what I wonder about with this. And I know we've talked about it. And me and Robin have talked about it. Robin's out, by the way, today. His daughter's getting married. He'll be back on Monday. Is the old guard? Is the fact that this case is stalling? Is this also a symptom of the fact that there are so many newer folks in here, and the old guard that you had, Robin had, so many folks had to help show the ropes, to help, you know, get you to become the old guard, eventually to work your way into that position. Are they just not there anymore? And are there too many folks that are just inexperienced? Not that there's anything wrong with not having experience, but they just don't have the extra folks with those extra reps in there that may be thinking along some of these lines for more creative ways of diving into an investigation.
I think that's for sure part of it. If you look at this one, we know that the local entity that was put on it, the local detective, had 6 months experience. So he's just a self-check. He doesn't have the amount of time. Then you look on the bureau side, and all I'm going to tell you is after 9/11, what happened was you had this huge shift from criminal, organized crime, violent crime investigators that all were forced to shift to work counterterrorism. That is not violent crime. It's not, you're really, it's more of an intelligence type role. You're trying to get informants at mosques. You're trying to make sure this country's safe from bad actors, international terrorists, right? A total complete shift to actually boots on the ground doing cases against bad, violent criminals. Now you have this new shift, right? They're trying to get back to that. They're tired that the gangs have taken over and their street crime. But now you don't have that guard that were raised under all the violent crime guys. Real retired 2016-ish. And now you have the people that are really good at counterterrorism. I think no time behind the tiller in some of these cases. I'll give you the case in point here. Why didn't they go up on the roof to check? I told you my story about how I knew, how I learned my lesson about how you have to check roofs. Not one person had an issue and knew to check a roof. So now they know. I guarantee all those case agents would be like, let's check the roof.
Yeah. And it's, I'm not trying to say anything disparaging. It's just, you don't have the reps. You know, you gotta get them. It takes time. And that's the only thing that does is time and experience. And I believe, you know, people are trying to do their best, but when that element is missing, then it does, you don't have, you know, the full strength of what that investigation could be theoretically. Hopefully if nothing else, this gives a lot of agents some reps for other investigations that they go on. Fascinating conversation as always. Jennifer Coffendaffer, check out her podcast, Break the Case, her YouTube channel, Break the Case. She's talking about this all the time, has gone far more in depth than we just did in this 1 hour. There's hours and hours and hours of you breaking this down. So go and check that out with Jen on Break the Case. Definitely worth your time to do that. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Until next time, for Jen, for Todd, and for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code podcast15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.